I'm Stacey Gross, and this is Two Moms Day Drinking. So the past few weeks have been difficult for everyone, both in terms of scheduling and in terms of life. While I've had to back off on interviews, a hiatus I hope will end soon, I've been focusing on audio columns to accompany the weekly written columns I contribute for Your Daily Local. If you haven't had a chance to check them out yet, you definitely should, because they kick ass. Not just the publication, but the guys behind it. Andy Close and Brian Hagberg were my co-workers once upon a time, when we all shared a newsroom as reporters or editors for our local newspaper. Today, Andy and Brian are 6 months into a partnership to provide local news coverage in ways that print publications are unable to. They're bringing a new set of voices and a willingness to experiment while still providing timely, reliable, and fresh news to Warren County and the region. Brian is a father, and I remember it being known that Andy looked forward to having kids one day. This week, I sat down and talked with them together about what parenting is like, what we imagine or imagined parenting would be like, and all the ways it defies or will defy our expectations in the end.
Got them the cheapest ones that I could find on Amazon until the 6 months is up, and then we will decide if we actually like the guitar or if we hate it and never want to touch it again.
We got Anna a miniature trumpet.
Oh, wow.
So we'll see how that goes. The problem is now, so Caitlin is our four-year-old.
Yeah.
And so she sees it. She's like, I want to play with it.
Yeah.
And she doesn't grasp that this is an instrument,
right.
Not a toy.
Right. Everything is a toy.
Well, yeah. So every time we get it out, then it's, I want to play with it. Well, it's not something you play with.
Right.
And then it's tears.
Yeah. Like, I can't. These two have been going through it. I don't know. These two have been going through. I don't know if they're, they have been together a lot. They're used to school. And even, you know, in the summers, it would even get this way toward the end of the summer.
That's, I said in, at the beginning of July.
Yeah.
They were acting as though it was the end of August.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Because it was, that's, they'd already been together for
socially, break. That was their world. That's where they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're, I don't know, we're in like September 18 now, like the 18th year, just September all year long. It's terrible. They're horrible.
It's bad. They need.
They need to get out and be around other kids.
Yeah. And, you know, and then we're like, Chris and I have been looking, like digging into the state data and stuff. It's so bad. So bad. Like, they are so far off on everything.
Yeah.
Like, there was a thing in the Trib today that basically the nursing home data.
Oh, God.
Forget about it.
Yeah.
And then, and then the state spokesman, who won't respond to our questions, says that, well, we don't have anybody on this full time. It's just people doing it part time.
Well,
in
do you know
to their other duties? I'm like,
do you know that I was on Indeed the other day just because I keep an eye on what's out there, just to see if there's more opportunities to move back into something more creative rather than practical. And I came across a contact tracer for the CDC. They're just looking for random people to work remotely to contact trace. Yeah. I mean, just I could be the person responsible for finding out.
All this quarantining and stuff that they're doing in the school district, they're doing all the contact tracing themselves.
Nuh-uh.
Amy said that at one of the meetings. Because the Department of Health is so overwhelmed that they're basically doing all the contact tracing. They've got their own, like, internal numbers that they go by and all this stuff. And it's like,
oh, no. this is why. And when I saw it happening, I think we didn't even try to go back to school in the fall.
Yeah.
As soon as they came home, I said, we're homeschooling. We tried the virtual thing. That didn't work. But they can't be
in
school.
Did you know they got rid of the social studies?
Did they?
Yep.
I think enough people bitched because I know I can't be the only one.
No.
No.
And that was when they got sent home. Mm-hmm. Anna's teacher had said something like, oh, this is supposed, you know, like their schedule. And it's like, oh, you do, you know,
right.
Foundations.
And, yeah.
You know, this is social studies time. And then the first day he's like, yeah, so they took out all the social studies. Oh my God. I know why.
Stacey, look what you've done. I told everybody. Yeah. I was like, this is not appropriate.
No, it's not. And I'm sure it was just one of those.
Oh, yeah. Just
probably PDE told them, mm-hmm. Oh, here's this. Use this.
Yeah. And,
nobody thought of it.
And I'm not faulting the district in any way because who has time? I mean, we have no protocol for this. We are all just trying to make the best decisions we can. And I'm sure that someone missed that, but good Lord.
I would guess PDE probably sent something that said, hey, here's this curriculum that's widely used and blah, blah, blah. And
just
nobody even
neglected to mention the fact that the first three lessons are Old Testament Bible study. You know, I mean, this is what scares me about this kind of thing. People are going to be looking for ways to get, and it's such a weird time in America with the ideology and all of the rhetoric. And it's just such a weird time for kids to be exposed to stuff like that in public school too. You know, like just all these little ways for people to get it. And I don't know, we're very fractured right now.
Yes.
That's putting it mildly.
Yeah. It's just such a weird time. I feel like I'm outside of it, watching it from outside, and I don't feel like I'm...
It's so interesting, though, I know nobody has, like, a lot of time.
Right.
But if you have, like, a half hour or whatever, you know, just go back and forth between your Facebook and Twitter feeds.
Yeah.
And you can just see it
develop.
Yeah. It's like Facebook is all right wing, and Twitter is all left wing, and it's like... Dear God.
There is a reason I haven't been on Facebook. I think I've posted like three times on Facebook for the past 6 months, and I just don't.
I don't post a whole lot of stuff. I mean, I share our stories,
yeah, obviously. That's pretty much it.
But that's it.
I'm jealous.
Yeah?
Like, I'd love to not be on it. But
I don't participate at all.
And then the worst part is seeing family members.
I had this conversation with Aaron Stearns. I've had this conversation with numerous people, and I walk into my mom's house and there's Fox News after all this, and I'm not going to ask because I don't want to know. Mm-hmm. But how can you not be seeing this?
My father will flip back between all of the channels. He'll go to Fox, to CNN, to MSNBC, and then he'll bitch about all of them.
I think that's a really healthy way to ingest news right now. In fact, when I'm on my commutes, I watch PBS, I watch MSNBC, and I try to watch something that's more conservative and just kind of draw my conclusions based on extrapolation from what's logical and likely. You know?
Reuters, BBC.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. AP.
Oh,
AP.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, anybody else is, I don't know.
It's whatever. You have to there's so much due diligence you need to do to understand who's providing you with the news that you're getting.
You know, I mean, you used to look at places like the New York Times and the Washington Post. MSNBC in print.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, what the hell happened?
What is happening? People have gotten so, it's fascinating to me. I went to school for psychology. It's fascinating to me how quickly people, when times are uncertain, will just switch to their automatic, fear, emotional-based response. And it's terrifying. I don't know what to even...
It's like everybody found their demographic and said...
This is... Yep.
This is who we have, and this is what they want, and this is what we're going to give them.
Yeah. Yeah. Feel free to cherry pick your news, and I don't know. I don't know. It scares me, but I feel like it's also there. I mean, the system is working, which is really, really encouraging. I was very concerned in the beginning. I did not celebrate any Biden win for several days after everyone else was already in the streets, you know, because I was cautious about even, I didn't know what he could even do or try.
Go celebrate in these streets and see what
we'll see. That's exactly what I was saying.
Go celebrate in the Twitter streets.
There were campfires down there. There were, people gathered on election night. They truly believed there were guns being fired. There were tires being squealed. It was not scary because I know where I live and I'm comfortable here. Like I grew up like this, but still it was unsettling and it was a little bit on the border for me. I felt.
I will be very curious to see what happens Wednesday.
I'm, and that's the thing. Every single thing in the news organizations, everybody keeps trying to say, no, obviously we know that's not true. Obviously we know that Joe Biden will, but I'm thinking, gee, I mean, nothing that has happened in the past 6 months I could have even predicted would even be attempted by anyone.
Yeah.
And it has. So who even knows what could happen? That's astounding. I know, all that stuff is loud.
The fire's like, oh no, shut up.
Shut up. This is what happened when Aaron came. His was actually like 2.5 hours and I had to break one into just politics. So
that's not surprising.
Yeah. So, but that's, I mean, it's been a cool project. It's just, anybody who has something to say can come up here and say what they want to say and I'll listen to them and say weird shit. And it turns out, I don't know. I think
I've had a few drinks and call it a day.
It's the best gig ever. No, people have gotten a hold of me just randomly and said, oh, I listened to this episode and it's really something that I'm dealing. So I feel like that's what I want to do is just highlight a bunch of different voices.
Yeah.
So you want kids, Andy. Do you still? I feel like that was the thing when I was at the
TO. I feel like people tell me, oh, you'll be a great dad, blah, blah, blah. Like, but every year that goes by, and you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I would love kids, but I enjoy other people's kids.
Yeah.
I enjoy being an uncle.
Yeah.
We should probably quantify that.
No, that sounded really bad. It's like telling people you enjoy like going over to their house and you see their dog.
Yeah.
You don't want a dog.
I don't want a dog. Yeah, I get that. But, that makes complete sense.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I wouldn't rule it out.
No?
Yeah, we'll see. Still young.
Yeah.
But not that young.
I mean, everybody's waiting until they're older now. Yeah. But like, I don't know. I never thought that I wanted to have kids. It's always surprising when I meet someone who's close to my own age who is absolutely certain that they wanted kids or at one point was certain.
It's, you never know what life's going to bring you. And that's like, you can say you do or you don't want something, but at the end of the day, sometimes it happens without whether you want it to or not.
Right. Kids always intimidated the hell out of me.
Yeah.
I was always like, I don't know what to think of you. I feel like you can see into my soul. Like, I don't know if I like you.
So wait, you weren't one of those people that was like, so I've met people that are like legitimately scared of kids.
I was uncomfortable around kids. Yeah. I had never even, when I brought those two home, I had never even been alone with someone's baby before. That I had never like been and alone with an infant. That was my first.
And all of a sudden you got.
Yeah.
So both of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Never had I even babysat alone. If I held a baby prior to bringing those two home, it was only because the mom needed to do something real quick.
I should rephrase that. I tried to babysit one time.
Yeah.
And, it was like a 6-month-old.
Mm-hmm.
And she started crying. And would not stop. I mean, to the point, and I was... got a teenager.
Well, and that's,
I mean, to the point that I literally had to call my mom and be like, I can't get this kid to stop crying. I don't know what to do. You know, and she came over and it was just, she needed a female touch.
Yeah.
Because she, you know what I mean? She had never not had a woman present.
Oh, okay.
Even being babysat, it had all been by girls.
Yeah.
And she just wasn't used to...
I feel like it has more to do with, like, just confidence and just when you pick them up, they know if you're nervous or, like, by the time they were 6 months old, I was like, come on, one under each arm, you know? I don't know.
It's funny, not in your case, but, like, your case, Brian, I'd be curious, first kid to second kid, because I've had people tell me, like, the first kid, they're so careful and cautious, and by the second kid, you're like, oh, we're not going to break them.
To an extent.
Yeah.
I mean, by that point... You know, we had had...
if you're going to talk, I need you to be in your room. Because that is very clear on the audio and I can't edit it out, okay? Why don't you guys go and sit in your room or sit at the top of the stairs, okay? Because I can't do this the whole time. All right? Okay. Thank you. It's fine if you listen, but please do it quietly.
So, I mean, for us, we had had our... Nephew was at least a year old at that point. And so there were some things that we had seen, you know, with that. Now, we moved to Colorado shortly after he was born. But then my wife's best friend had kids, and she had three boys. And we were over there one time, and her youngest, like, fell down and smacked his face on the table or something like that. And she started laughing. It's like, you know, you know, and we kind of looked at each other. Yeah. We're like, all right, well, that's kind of what you need to do. And so there was, I mean, obviously there was that, okay, what, you know, learning your kid kind of thing. But it wasn't that. It's like a delicate little piece of glass, and I've got a fingertip, you know, for us. So it wasn't that different, you know. And then we had unique circumstances with McKenna, our middle child, because she was, you know, growth restricted in the womb, and you know, came out, she was 5 pounds when she was born. So we had to be a little bit more careful with her, just because.
Was that a hard adjustment for you?
Not really.
No.
Just because we were prepared for it, you know. Yeah. I mean, we had gone months and months of, you know, with Anna, you did your regular kind of, you know, get your ultrasounds once a month and blah, blah, blah. And with McKenna, we were going like twice a week for ultrasounds, and they were checking her lungs. And so by the time she was born, it was like, okay, she's here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we can treat her like a normal kid.
Yeah.
So, which she's far from. But yeah, so no, it wasn't, you know, you see that commercial where the, you know, the mom's like, oh,
yeah.
You know, and then the second kid she's handing him to the dirty mechanic or whatever. Yeah. It, to an extent, but not really for us.
No. Yeah. I never had time to be so careful with them. It was literally like a production line. And it was, I mean, I was married, but it was just me. It was just me. So I was home with them exclusively. That's when I started at the paper. That's why I was so weird. I had been home exclusively with two infants and for the first time in my entire life. That's why I was so weird when I started.
I didn't know.
Oh my God. I was so, like, socially, I was like, I don't know how to function. I don't even know what to do. Barney's not on. Right. I had no concept for adult life.
The great thing about working in a newsroom is everyone's weird.
Everyone's weird.
I learned that very early on.
Yeah. It was fun. I liked it there, though. But that was the best thing for it. I mean, that was... I can't even imagine what I would be like. God, I would be on A&E if I hadn't started working at that point.
We won't say which show.
But. Yeah, any of them. All of them. I'd be a hoarder addict. Yeah. I don't even know what. It would be bad. I needed to work. I don't think I could ever stay home with kids. Not exclusively.
I can't imagine. A lot of people do, and a lot of people are happy doing it. But,
yeah.
Yeah, it definitely wouldn't be for me.
It wouldn't be for you. You wouldn't want to be like a stay-at-home dad.
No, that'd be hard.
Yeah.
That'd be hard.
I kind of was initially, just when I was working in a child care facility on base, and I worked with the older kids, so I only went in from like 6 to 9 and 3 to 6 every day.
Yeah.
So then in between, it was just me and the kid, you know, but I mean, she was, couldn't move.
Right.
So it was just plop her down and like, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to put on some football.
Yeah. There was a lot of crying, and I remember thinking, God, I wish they would just get bigger so that you could do more stuff for yourself. But I look back and I'm like, there was a lot less fighting. There was a lot less negotiating. There was a lot less losing of shoes.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it used to be. I would pick her up. We'd have somebody babysit her because there was like an hour overlap from when Autumn had to go in and when I could pick her up. And I would pick her up and put her in the car seat and get home and take her out of the car seat and set her on the kitchen counter in the car seat. And she would sleep for like 2 hours.
Oh, I love those days.
Yeah, right.
I love those days.
And I was just like, oh, that was the day, you know?
Yeah.
Because you can actually do stuff.
I feel like mine think that I hate them and that I don't want to spend time with them, but I feel like they don't quite understand, like, emotionally and cognitively, like, I'm tired at the end of the day. Like, it costs me to do that.
I know grown adults that don't appreciate that about their parents.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you come home at the end of the day and you're exhausted. And you want to see your kids more than anything. But at the same time, it's like, oh, my gosh, I could just lay down.
Could we watch a show instead of playing the board game tonight? Yeah, you know, could we? Yeah. How can I be lazy about this? You know, how can I put in the time but be a little bit... still sort of on the background, regenerate from my day.
I mean, that's one of the things that I miss about about the newsroom. You know, I miss the conversations.
Yes.
Because I thought they were most of the time. Most of the time. We had intelligent conversations. Mm-hmm. But then it was just that, okay, I have the next 8 hours mm-hmm. to focus on something, not kids, not taking care of the house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now it's just like, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I feel guilty that I'm not doing the other thing.
Yeah.
You know, like if I'm sitting down writing a story, I'm constantly thinking, oh, I should be doing this with this kid, or I could be wash dishes or, mm-hmm. you know, do whatever. And then when I'm doing those things, I'm like, oh, God, I could have been writing this story. I could have called this person. I could have, you know.
And then it comes time to have the stuff done and you're like, I get so overwhelmed. Yeah. I sit in bed and I'm like, I don't know what to do. There's so many things.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard working from, I am not mature or responsible enough for a completely work from home position. I'll put that right out there in the open. I need to go somewhere to be productive.
No, but it's funny you mentioned that because talking to Brian Ferry, he said the same thing.
Did he?
He said he misses the intelligent conversation, mostly intelligent conversation. Some just completely random off the wall conversations.
It was always a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, we had some characters in there.
We did. It was a good time, and that's exactly what I said. I mean, it didn't matter what I was working on. I was always happy to come to work because I knew I was going to talk to somebody, or it was going to just be something to take my mind off of here. How? I mean, are you completely? This is your whole. Both of you. This is your whole gig.
Mm-hmm. The gig.
Yeah.
So, what does your day consist of?
Right now my day consists of a lot of back and forth between kids making sure they're on their virtual academy or their Zoom class or whatever assignment they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
I mean, the first day they were home, I had about a 10-foot space in my house. And by 9 o'clock I had my little Fitbit monitor, right? And I had 3,000 steps in for the day, and I had gone literally 10 feet in my house. Mm-hmm. It was just constantly back and forth, making sure they were on the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, that's basically what my day consists of.
I love it.
The virtual learning is just crazy.
Yeah. I want to be, here's the deal. I don't want this to sound offensive, but I want to be like in your position. Because I think I would love virtual, like I would love a remote position, but with no kids, because it's just too much to do both things at once. I feel like I would really like it though. Yeah. I adjusted well. When they sent me home from the courthouse for a month, I was like, you're going to have to haul me back here. I don't know.
I mean, it was totally different when we just had Caitlin, you know. When she was home, I could be like, okay, here, you know, go do this or watch this movie or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I could go do some things for an hour and come back. And that was, I mean, it was still because I had expected her to be in preschool 4 days a week.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of an adjustment, but it was still, you know, we were able to get things done and, you know, I could call people and, you know, get story ideas and write and, you know, make sales calls and do whatever. But it, once all of them were home all day long, then it's just like, I mean, Andy and I call almost once a day just to kind of go over things.
Yeah.
And it ends up taking like a half hour because I'm constantly like, hey, you're supposed to get on Zoom now. Yeah. Hey, are you doing your math homework?
Yeah. There's no way for these two worlds to coexist. Mm. There's no way. I feel guilty about my job because I'm driving. Like Monday, I got to go to Wellsboro. That's 3 hours down and 3 hours back, you know, and then working in between. And I won't see the girls for 3 to 4 days a week, you know, because that's tough. Working. And I feel guilty because that's the time when I watch the news. That's the time when I think through my columns or think through something that I'm working on. And it's like time to myself and I feel guilty about it. Mm-hmm. I don't like to feel guilty about it, but I don't. Do you feel that way too?
All the time. That's what I said. I mean, if I'm sitting down writing a story, I feel guilty that, okay, I have time to do this. I could be, I could be up playing with one of the girls or helping them with homework or, you know, doing something around the house to help Autumn. Cause she's home too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so the five of us are home all day.
Yeah.
Every day.
See, but I think that's why I want to be in your position. If if it weren't for that, if I had just a little bit more of that, you know, randomly interspersed through my day, but it's like too much.
And so that adds another layer to it, because anytime she has to get up and help one of them do something, I'm like, oh, now she's interrupting her work.
Yeah. So now you feel guilty for that too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just like never, there's never a good time when I can sit down and do one thing and not be thinking I should be doing something else.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, I don't even, this is not sustainable. This whole, I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know. Everybody's like, the whole mask thing and politicizing things. But like, if we don't commit to 6 to 8 weeks where we're just very strict about things, we're never going to be done with this.
I feel like that's part of the problem, or a big part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And I know Brian and I have talked about that a lot, is just, if we would have just committed right from the start, I think we'd be, that's hard to, maybe not through it, but, but
things better off than we are different.
Now. Well, I mean, how many times, I mean, in March, we'd be sitting in the newsroom, would I say to somebody, you know, we'd be talking about this, and I'd say to somebody, look, just shut it all down for a month and call it a day.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like that, we just, we couldn't do that.
Yeah. That just doesn't work culturally for us.
Right.
Which apparently, you know, random rampant disease does, right, because we need to choose between one of two things. But
lesser of two evils.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I was thinking, Harper, I think, on the way to Walmart today said, when is this going to be over? And I said, I don't know that things will ever be the way they were before. Mm. Not ever. Because it's been too, this is too, we're too entrenched in this now. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is, I don't know. This is changing so many things. It's creating so many new changes down the line that we're going to have to repercussions.
Now, and Anna says that to me all the time. She's, when is COVID going to be done? When is the virus going to go away? And I'm just like, I wish I could tell you. And unfortunately, I don't know that it's ever going to go away. Mm-mm. Not fully.
No. This is now a part of our lives.
Yeah, it's going to be something that we have to learn to live with. Mm-hmm.
But I don't even know how to explain that to them. I don't think that they developmentally are at an age where they can understand it. I don't know that I am. Like, it's just, it just feels like, so I feel outside of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No, and I agree, though. I think there's a lot of things that are going to be, you know, that I'm talking to Josh and Brian, and that they're home permanently. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think there's going to be a lot of places that, you know, I said to Autumn the other day, sick days are probably going to become a thing of the past for a lot of places because they've seen that, we can just have people work from home and not miss anything. Mm-hmm. And so, you're too sick to come in? Okay, well, you can telework today.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and, that bums me out. I'm not one to call in, but man, you know, that would be terrible.
But, you know, for a lot of places, you know, obviously things like retail, you can't do that. But, you know,
like the snow days for the kids, that's never going to be a thing again because everything's going to be so tied into, everything has become so digital now and so accessible.
I think they will around here because there's too many people still, you know, we're in the rural.
Yeah.
Nobody, there's not enough broadband internet access. Yeah. I mean, to the point that they couldn't even go fully remote
here. No.
And so I think places like this,
we're insulated from that. I just want the bus to come. Thing, I used to love it when the school bus would come because that meant that I could, and it's not, I knew that they were going to be taken care of. I knew that they were going to have fun and see their friends at school. And then I would be able to focus on the things that I needed to do too. You know what I mean? There's just so much that you have to do for someone else all the time. I don't know. Yeah. I can't get back in the swing of things after. After at a certain point. That's why I write at 10, 11 at night, you know? I don't know.
No, I do that too. And, you know, and especially when sports start getting going again, it's, if I'm in bed before 1 a.m., that's a very good night.
It's a good night. Yeah. That's a good night.
Yeah. I don't know. I hope it works out with that publication because I would love to see something challenge be established. Available, you know.
And I think, you know, newspapers failed to adapt. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're seeing them fail.
Yeah.
I think it's too late now for them. I really do. I think the industry is dead. I think everyone's digital now, and you're going to see more and more and more. And I think that's a good thing. I really do think it's a good thing.
Print, any kind of print media is going to become like a niche thing. It's going to become like an artistic thing. It's going to, you can buy, you can get a magazine, you know, you can get a newspaper.
And don't get me wrong, like, there are certain things that, that I think people miss that, that have worked or in the industry. Like, for me personally, like, I kind of miss, you know, doing layout. I know that sounds crazy. And there are some nights where I wouldn't, but every once in a while I'm like, oh, I'd like to lay out a front page, or I'd like to do this, you know, and you have ideas in your head, and it's funny. You have to get, you know, doing this now, you have to get out of that mindset because it's different.
Yeah. There were a lot of opportunities to be randomly creative.
Yeah.
In the newsroom.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But there's still, you know, and I think this is where that failure to adapt has come in, is there's still a ton of ways to be creative with multimedia, and that people just don't want to see that.
Right. Well, I mean, I think there's not, the barrier to entry for something like this even is very low. So there's a sense that, well, it's not legitimate, or it's not going to look professional or sound professional. I can't do that type, but you can. Yeah. You know, there's, I don't know. I think there's ways to bring everything, all the different pieces in, and bring in even different voices. I don't know. That was a thing that felt that they were a little bit resistant to.
And you have to have, for some of that creative freedom, you have to have buy-in across the board. And there's, just speaking from where we all used to work, there was never buy-in across the board.
No.
And that's unfortunate because, you know, there are things that could have been done to make it better that I, you know.
Yeah. It was like a resistance to adapting to. Yes. I mean, there were clear indications that, oh, this is popular, or this is interesting, or people like this, or people want to see more of this, but that doesn't fit into what I think this newspaper should look like, so I'm not even going to, I don't know.
Well, you know, and like you said, the barrier to entry is so low, and there's so many, you know, blogs and web pages and things like this that claim to be something they're really not. You know, when we were first starting the site design, one of the things I probably said this, I don't know, about a dozen times, is I would randomly text him screenshots of places like, I don't want our site to look like this.
Yeah. Because
you just look at it, and it was a you know, legitimate site, but it looked fake.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like,
cheap.
Yeah.
And it's like, looked chintzy. Yeah.
And it's like, you know. Yeah. And so, I mean, I spent most of the summer was designing the site.
Yeah. Did you work with anybody? I feel like this is turning into more of a podcast about that. And I like that. If that's okay with you guys.
Yeah,
I feel like, you know, but did you work with anybody to help you do that design stuff, or?
Not really.
No.
I mean,
that's a big process, because I've done that for a couple of different projects, and that's a big process to undertake.
I mean, a friend of mine does some stuff, and I kind of asked his opinions on things.
Yeah.
But he'd been so far out of it himself that it was like, well, you know, 15 years ago when I was doing it, this is what we do. You know, and then as we kind of got closer to the launch, Chris jumped in and took some of his experience with the D9 site and applied it to some things that I just didn't know.
Right.
You know, and that kind of polished everything, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, and then we ended up having to do a complete redesign because our web hoster failed, or
really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I remember that.
Well, so we had the first theme that we had, the theme developer went under shortly after we developed or you know, started putting everything together. And I didn't realize it.
Oh no.
Because when I first started, they, you know, if I would go and ask them a question, they would respond right away.
Yeah.
And then, you know, about a month later, I started sending them stuff and nothing.
Nothing back.
Nothing. Yeah. Nothing. Nothing. And then I found out that they were done.
Oh, God.
So there were no updates coming to the theme, which, you know, you have to
have that.
And then the server crashed, and so we kind of basically said, all right, well, we need to get a new server. We might as well get a new theme that we know is going to work with a new server, and did a complete redesign. And that took significantly less time.
Yeah.
Just because we had kind of...
already thought through the process,
Done it once, and Chris and I were really, you know, back and forth with it. Okay, this is what we want to... All right, we're going to go with this, and here's we're going to put this, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. That's the nice thing about those kinds of projects, though. Once you get that groundwork laid, those things are already decided, and you just work from, you know.
And so far, I mean, we've, you know, had a number of people who, you know, are professionals in the industry and stuff, and said they've taken a look, and looks very professional, everything. So
yeah,
it looks good. At least we got that part right. That I don't know if we did anything else right. It looks good. So.
Well, who all did you have to work with to make this happen? I mean, is it just you guys together built this website? And what happens if somebody sues you because I wrote an article that they say is a lie? Like, you know what I mean? Well, how do you guys deal with that?
So those are one of the things. Like, there's insurance.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to get insurance, and, you know, we have like a...
Like, how long did it take you to figure out how all of this works, I guess, is my question.
It helped having Chris with us because he'd been through this process before.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there were a lot of times when we would come up with stuff and kind of throw it out, and we'd be like, okay, well, but first, before we can do any of that, we need to do, you know, ABC. And so that was very helpful.
I think a lot of it, too, you learn as you go.
Yeah.
You know, you don't sit there and say, oh, I have it all figured out on day one. It's a process.
Yeah.
And that's part of the fun of it, though, too.
Yeah. That would be intimidating to me. See, I'm one of those people who likes to know all things before I start something.
Well, see, I mean, and we had, you know, Andy and I had talked about doing a site probably for, what, at least a year, you know, before COVID came.
Right.
And just, you know, and like I said, I mean, I knew those changes were coming.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a lot of people believed me when I told them that those changes were coming.
Right.
But you could see just in the way decisions were being made and things were being fleshed out, it was pretty obvious that that was the way they wanted to go.
Right.
And I think COVID just kind of gave the, oh, well, we can do it now and blame the pandemic and call it a day. But so we had been talking for a long time, you know, about there's got to be something else. And, you know, us being initially sports guys,
right?
You know, focused more on that. You know, and then Chris got in, and he had been talking about doing something similar. You know, when he found out that we were talking about the same thing, and said, "Well, hey, if we do news too, then you know, if sports gets shut down, we still got something."
Yeah. That was
And so, I mean, it really just kind of, and then it took off.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm so glad. It's nice to have a different outlet. It's nice to have a different perspective than what's already been here for, you know, a long time.
Yeah.
And the one thing we talked about, I feel like I keep coming back to this, though, is creative freedom.
Yeah.
And that's something that Brian and I, you know, talked about when we were at the paper and how we didn't have that. And I know we've touched on that already. Yeah. And I just think, again, if you have people that are talented and know what they're doing, let them
do what they do, and just let it, you know, do what it does.
Yeah.
And that was hard when I was there. But I think that's what intimidated me about ever trying to do anything like what you guys are doing. Which is why I'm glad that you're doing it, because I come from, like, I know creative nonfiction, I know literary work, you know, I know writing and book shit, but I don't know, you know, around here what's going to work. So the stuff that I tried to push the envelope as much as I could when I was there, and just kind of push the boundary as far away from where it was as I could.
It's interesting, because we will constantly look at numbers for stories and be like, you know, certain things will take off.
Randomly.
Randomly. Certain things will take off, and it's like, okay, did not expect that. And then other things that, you know, you pour all this time and effort and energy into, and you're like, ah, oh, this is going to be great. And like three people read it.
That is not unlike parenting, though. Like, you have all of these plans. You have all of these, I'm going to do this, and this is how I'm going to, and it never turns out that way, and you got to just roll with it then.
And the kids have other plans.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was funny. Like, the first time we did a, oh, hey, we've got a, you know, winter weather thing or something like that. It took off. I mean, there's like 2,000 people were reading it. I'm like, it's the weather, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, but...
They used to say, that's all they want, weather and obituaries.
Crime, too, man.
Yeah, they dig that. Oh, they dig that crime. Mm.
People want to know the gossip.
Yeah. But it's, how do you walk the line between, do you just stick to really straight, just, you know, journalistic, yeah.
And really, we don't, you know, we're not every day checking, you know, the...
Mm-hmm. Dockets,
and you know, I mean, you go through and I'll go through and look and see if there's anything that's kind of big.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not. I don't think necessarily that everybody's, you know, we're retail looking, theft of $15 at Walmart.
Yeah.
Necessarily needs to
be reported.
Yeah, be reported. I mean, that's
this isn't Mayberry, so we don't all need to know. I'm just gonna put more wood on the fire. Yeah, it's do you feel like there's going to be an opportunity for you guys to draw attention away from that, or do you think that that's just what Warren?
Well, so
is always going to worry.
I over the summer had a conversation with an attorney, and they had said, you know, one of the things they hated that every newspaper does is, you know, the blotter.
Yeah,
and we didn't do one for a long time, and then it just came down to the, you know, at some point you have to put some of this stuff in because, you know, it is necessary. But what I'd like to do is kind of circle back with them and just be like, okay, hey, you don't like it because there's not a lot of follow up, which is fair.
Yeah.
You know, how many times do you, you know, go online or open a newspaper and, oh, so and so was charged with blah, blah, blah. But then you don't know what happens beyond that, you know, outside of the big cases.
Right.
Or, you know, if somebody goes and sits in sentencing court for a day, you know, and puts,
put a big list together. Yeah. What does this mean, actually? Right. You know?
You know, and so they said that was, you know, that's one of the things. It's like, you know, you can have somebody, so-and-so was charged with, you know, say, you know, attempted homicide, right? And if you don't go follow up, all you ever have, if somebody does a search on them, is, oh, they were charged with this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I'd like to get something to where we can get, you know, obviously there's two of us. So,
yeah. Right.
You know, we'd spend all day at the courthouse if we did this. But to get to the point where you can go and follow up.
Yeah.
You know, and say, hey, if charges were dropped, they're dropped, and this is why, you know, and that kind of thing. And I think there is a better way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, charges being dropped isn't necessarily as sexy or appealing to the average reader.
Right.
But if you're going to do it with any kind of journalistic integrity, it needs to be done that way. And just across the board in the industry, it hasn't been.
Yeah.
So eventually I'd like us to get to the point where, you know, if we can bring some more people on.
Right.
Like, okay. You are the crime and courts person.
Yeah.
And
that's
all you're going to do.
Yeah. And that was the thing when I started, and John was very clear, there's no beats, there's no, you know, niches, but it would have been helpful to even have like, okay, so we don't want to have a crime and court reporter, or maybe we have like a crime and court clerk that just goes to run and check those things and, you know, bring back the information.
Yeah. And I think that's, again, that's one of those things that just, industry wide with the failure to adapt.
And that's, I'm curious what your thoughts are on how you want to deal with that as a publication. Do you know what I mean? What are your parameters here in Warren? Do you know what I mean? How creative or experimental can you be?
Honestly, I think you can be very experimental. You know, there's a ton of stuff that people haven't done for a long time that I don't understand why they haven't done it. You know, we started doing Facebook live broadcasts of sporting events.
Yeah.
Right? And by the end of the season, the radio station was doing video for it too.
Yeah.
Why did it take them until the end of this year when somebody else showed them how it could be done to start doing that?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of stuff. There's no
outside the box. Why does nobody try it? Why does nobody try it here? So,
you know, and that so many people came to me and said, you know, obviously there were a lot of viewers because of spectator limitations and things like that. But people said to me, you know, my parents who are, you know, 70 years old and kind of homebound and don't want to go sit in the bleachers when it's cold have said, as long as somebody's doing this, we're not going to come physically to the games because it's just easier physically on our bodies to stay home. And then, but then we still get a chance to see and cheer and do all that kind of stuff. And it's like, there's no reason that stuff couldn't have been done for the last decade even.
Yeah.
I think people and businesses get stuck in a certain way of doing things. And it's just, oh, that's the way we've always done them. And it's just, it becomes easy.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, why would we change?
Yeah. I guess that was the most perplexing thing to me when I was writing was I don't understand why we can't try this. There was just it was just inflexible.
Yeah.
You know, inflexible. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, that was so I had two stints at the paper, one before we moved to Colorado and then when we moved back. And, you know, they had all the social media feeds and everything. But before we moved to Colorado, I was literally the only reporter on Twitter.
Yeah.
And they tried to shut it down.
Really?
Because I was live tweeting updates.
Yeah.
Well, if you're tweeting the score, then nobody's got a reason to read the paper in the morning.
Yes.
My God. Nobody is reading the paper to get the score.
Yeah, dude.
Like, you can find out what, I mean, go troll your own Facebook timeline and you've seen the score.
Yeah.
That's not why they're, you know, and I'm like, why would you say no? This is as long as it brings eyeballs, who cares?
Yeah, who cares if they're buying the morning's paper or like if it's.
But because you're so married to print,
right?
That you
and that's
don't...
the thing. I love print. I love print. I love the aesthetic of it. I love the way it makes me feel like I'm in the 1920s and very cool to be a reporter. I love that, but it's not gonna. That you can't rely on that anymore.
It's too expensive.
No, it's
It's too expensive. People aren't paying for it the way they used to.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not just here. That's
everywhere.
Again, across
everywhere.
The board.
Yeah. Everything's instantaneous.
Yeah.
You can't, by the time you get the paper the next morning, everyone already knows what went on.
The paper the next morning is for when you want to cut it out and put it in your scrapbook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not for when you want the information. You want the information now. And the fact is that the information is going to be available to you somewhere.
Yeah.
So you want to be the person making it available. And that just was never, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that was, you know, I never understood the, and when, you know, when I was in Colorado, I worked at it was a weird kind of setup. I worked for a local publishing company who had a contract with the bases to print their newspapers once a week.
Right.
And part of the contract was they supplied a person who was me. And, but so I'm in the, you know, I'm in working in the office. And they were even in that process of, yeah, you know we have this print thing that comes out once a week, but when the story's done, publish it to the website.
Yeah.
Because after a certain point, it's no longer timely.
Right.
You know, and it that, I think, was one of the things that really kind of got me looking like, all right, well, people are still picking this up.
Yeah.
You know, like when... Yeah. When I would walk through, the racks would be, you know, you could see people were still picking it up.
Yeah.
But it wasn't being hurt by the fact that it was online ahead of time.
Yeah. There's a way for those two things to coexist.
And I don't think a lot of, quote unquote, traditional newspapers have figured out or understood that you don't have to wait for it to be in print before you go digital.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and they're not marketing their digital ad spaces the way they really should.
Yeah.
And it's just a whole lot of, because nobody's ever had, I think, either the ability or the permission to have that kind of out-of-the-box thinking.
Yeah.
And really take advantage of the things that are available to them.
Yeah. What kinds of things do you guys want to do with it? like down the line, just like crazy 10 years from now, what would you love to have tried with this?
Well, I mean, we've already talked. I would love for us to have a daily, mm-hmm. you know, news wrap podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, I think daily's probably a few years down the road, but.
Well, I mean, it doesn't have, you know, easy and quick to do.
So. You know, weekly probably is coming in the next mm-hmm. few months.
Yeah.
I think that's a good place to start. You know, obviously we've already been doing live video mm-hmm. Of sports things. I think there's definitely for some, you know, news things, there's a space for live video for that.
Yeah.
I think just having video stories.
Yeah.
It is something, you know, especially around here, it's like, oh, well, I'm going to be on TV. Oh, out of Erie.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
So you're being seen by all these people in Erie who don't know you and don't care.
Right.
But we could put a video up that's going to be seen by people, you know, and it's done by people who know you and understand what it is you're talking about and how to present. So I think there's definitely...
I think as a consumer of media, mm-hmm. I like a variety of mm-hmm. mediums. I like a little bit of print. I like a little bit mm-hmm. where I can just hop on my phone and find it. I like to have the audio. I like to have, you know, so I like a diverse mm-hmm. offering from the same org because I like that I can I can say that, well, I know this organization. I like what mm-hmm. they put out, but I can try different things from them, you know.
Yeah. I mean, outside of print, again, just because of the cost, mm-hmm. I don't see that being something that's reasonable.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, audio stuff, video stuff.
Yeah.
You know, more photocentric things.
Yeah.
I think could work if they're done right. We've tried some of that.
Yeah.
And I think it's just finding the right formula for it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and we're certainly not going to be afraid to try new things.
Yeah.
That's
what's cool. That's what I like about it.
Yeah. And there, you know, and we're not hurt by it anyway.
Right.
Okay. Well, it takes up space on your website.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So nobody clicks on that page.
Oh, bummer. Or views that video.
You know, it didn't cost me mm-hmm. space somewhere else in a print product.
Yeah.
And I think that drives a lot of the fear.
It does.
Because you have, you know, when you're primarily print, you have limited space.
Yeah.
And so you really have
very tangible resources and costs. And
I think that drives that fear of, well, we've got limited space and we know people will read this. Mm-hmm. We don't know if they'll do this.
Yeah.
Let's maybe not do that. We'll, mm-hmm. we'll stick with what we know.
Yeah. Do your kids, like, these two sometimes will just want to have, like, a random, they'll do a commercial, or, like, they'll want to write a news story about what happened in our day. And that started when I worked at the paper with you guys.
My kids are just kind of getting to the point where they understand what it is that I do.
Yeah.
Anna, my oldest, is almost 8, and she really got into it when I would take her to I took her to the girls' basketball games a lot. Yeah. She loves those girls. And I love that she's got local people she can look at as role models. Like, you know, she made me sign her up for basketball at the Y year because, you know, she wanted to be like Emma Ruhlman.
She enjoyed that.
And I said, well, if you want to be like her, you got a lot of practice.
Yeah.
But so she's kind of getting that, you know, Autumn, when I would go up and do video for the football games, Autumn would kind of put it on the TV for a little bit so that they could hear me. And I came home, you know, the next following a Friday night game, and Anna came down. She's like, Daddy, I didn't see you. I said, well, no, honey, I'm behind the camera. You're not supposed to watch me. You're just supposed to hear me. She's like, well, I thought I was going to watch you.
I was very disappointed. Yeah. Like, Dad.
Honey, trust me. You are literally the only person on the planet who wants to see me.
Is interested in that offering.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's starting to, you know, and working at home, they're mm-hmm. starting to see a little bit more, you know, what it is that we do and taking a little bit of an interest in it.
That's
that way.
Cool. But, maybe they'll be.
Yeah.
They'll be the next generation.
I hope so. I doubt it, but I hope so.
I think mine are going to be WWE wrestlers. I think they get into some fights up there.
Well, so apparently I'm raising The Rock.
Really?
So McKenna, my middle child, always refers to herself in the third person. So, all right, girls, what are you going to have for lunch? Well, McKenna's going to have the... Child, you are not the rock. There is one rock, and that's it. And he was badass and cool in the late 90s. Not that he's not a badass now.
He's going to come find you. Yeah.
In case Dwayne wants to come find me later, he's absolutely a badass. My kids love you and Moana. But no, it's funny, and that's actually probably going to be my next column, is that I'm raising the rock, because it's, and I have no idea where it came from. None of my other kids have done it.
These guys are obsessed with John Cena. We've never a day in our lives watched. We've never a day in our lives. I don't know. I don't know where it comes from. And they're like, always, they say it. It makes me laugh because I'm like, what the fuck?
See, and I mean, yeah, like I said, I was a child of the, you know, badass late 90s WWE, you know, Stone Cold and The Rock and DX and all that stuff. That was my thing, man, you know. And I mean, even until the last few years, you know, I would still, I mean, I just this past summer sold almost my entire DVD collection.
Really?
Yeah. And which was significantly larger than my wife would have liked. But yeah, so I mean, I was a big fan. But there's been a few times when I've had stuff on, and they're just nope, don't care, not interested. They hate it when I watch sports.
Really?
I was just like,
aww.
Except Penn State football. They like when I watch Penn State football. We finally got them trained to understand. it helped that I was able to take Anna down to the spring game a couple years ago. Which is how I got Autumn to start kind of following it. I took her to a game one time. But yeah, so they don't share my interests at all. Not even a little bit.
You have a good relationship with your parents, don't you?
I do. Very much so.
What do you think that you have that? Because at my age, I feel like I don't really understand my parents at all.
I think just an appreciation of how hard it was to raise kids.
Yeah. You realized it. See, they tell me that these guys are going to realize someday what they'll understand someday. No. But Andy does.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Well, I think it's, and every kid's different too. Every kid's different. And I don't think you truly appreciate what your parents do for you until you're grown up.
Yeah.
And some things you're just not, like, you can't see it. You're not mature enough. You're not. Some things just come with age and time, and I just think that's one of them. You know, I certainly didn't have that appreciation at, you know, 14.
No.
But you know what kid does.
Yeah.
See, and I did, I think, a little bit because, you know, I was, you know, raised by a single mom, and so she had me doing a lot of, you know, the second I started putting pads on to play football, she said, you're washing your own shit.
Yeah.
I'm not messing with that nonsense.
Yeah.
But so just kind of getting those things, I think, given to me at a little bit younger age than some people get, I think maybe start to appreciate a little bit more, like, oh, this is work.
This sucks.
Who wants to do this?
Yeah. What do you picture parenthood being like? What do you think? I don't know.
Constant chaos.
Yeah. Well, that's accurate.
Well, okay, don't base it on. So she's raising twins, and I've got, you know,
you've got girls. The rock.
Yeah. I'm just raising the rock.
No, I don't want to be cliche about it, because parenting's not cliche. Parenting's, but I imagine it's the most maddening yet rewarding thing a person can experience. Am I off base there?
I don't think he's off base, but I feel
I feel like mine are definitely at an age still where it's far more maddening than
The rewards are not as
well. I shouldn't say that, because I mean, McKenna makes me laugh.
Yeah.
All the time.
Right.
But you know, when she gets in her moods, then I'm like, get away from me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, there are, the intensity of each is so great. Mm-hmm. Like, you may not get a lot of rewards, but when you get them, like when you have those moments, they're
special.
They're intensely, profoundly meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
But it, at the same time, the other 90% of the time, when it's maddening, it's, I don't think I had any concept of how crazy I could actually go until I was fighting with a 4-year-old over shoes or whatever, you know, cereal. I don't think I had any concept for how you're gonna find these crevices in your mind, level of madness that you can reach that will terrify you and astound you.
That you didn't know existed.
You did not know. Kids.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Now, the arguments over, well, she took my toy. Well, but it's her toy. Well, but I was playing with it.
Yeah.
Well, but it's hers. But she took it from me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hers.
Yeah.
Well, but she took it from me.
Yeah.
It's child.
Yeah.
No. Did you ask if you could play with it? No, I was playing with it.
You're trying to explain the concept of like theft by taking, theft by unlawful taking to a 4-year-old is it's horrifying. Yeah, no. There's no getting through.
No. And now the younger two are at that point where like you have to explain to them, I understand that you're mad, but you can't just walk up to people and punch them in the face.
Yes.
That's frowned upon in society.
Yeah.
You'll go to jail later on.
Yeah.
If you do it now, I'll go to jail.
So. Either way,
somebody's going to jail.
Please stop.
Sound like Harvey Keitel in National Treasure. Well, somebody's got to go to prison. Well, I prefer it not be me.
I'd really like not to go to prison.
Yeah. There are days that I just went to Walmart with them, and I feel like everybody is like, wow, what a bitch. But I'm like, we're fighting over who's pushed the cart farther.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I just stopped in an aisle, and I'm trying to be calm, and I'm trying to calmly explain, but I'm like, this is not a thing that I can do with you.
No.
See, I'm not going to measure the millimeters that you pushed the cart.
Of the things that I think COVID will keep permanent in society, grocery pickup.
Yes.
Is a marvelous thing.
It's my favorite thing.
Yes, because I can sit them in the car and say, hey, we're going to the store. Oh, I want to push the cart. We're
no.
not pushing the cart today.
There's no cart.
Nobody's
anymore.
Even getting out of the car.
Yeah, it's hard. I don't. That'll be surprising for you the first time that you take a kiddo with about that age, about 7, mm-hmm. 8, 9 to Walmart. Mm-hmm. The amount of time and the amount of strategy that you're going to need to just get like bread, milk, and peanut butter.
Yeah.
It's gonna blow your mind, Andy. You're gonna have to really plan it out.
I'm like picturing this in my mind and I'm terrified.
Well, and you have to learn the detours.
Yeah. Which aisles?
Around the cereal and the candy aisles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because otherwise then you're gonna have
to negotiate.
Yeah. Or somebody is laying on the floor kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
You're wondering where that child's parents and what.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
I would rather set myself on fire than have to walk into Walmart for something important.
So we thought we went and got new phones right around Thanksgiving time. And we thought we were doing good because we said, okay, well, while we're doing this, you know, I'll be over there and get my phone set up and, you know, we'll let them wander the toy aisle and tell us what they want for Christmas, and, you know, and then we'll switch. And then it was trying to explain to the 4-year-old that, no, you're telling us what you want for Christmas. We're not taking any of this home today.
Yeah. The things that you didn't think that you didn't think that you would have to explain that you then do. And it's
that doesn't get through.
Yeah.
We're not doing this today. There's no concept of in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's all
right now.
Right now. And however you're feeling right now is how you're going to feel forever.
Yes.
So if you're upset right now, you're very intensely upset. Mm-hmm. Like dealing with that, learning how to deal with that has been intense. But then they crawl in bed and they're like, oh, and everybody's calm.
Yeah. Or they, you know, they come curl up on your lap and I love you, daddy.
Oh my gosh.
All right. I'll let you live.
Yeah. This is why.
But, but those are, you know, those are the, when they do it, you know, at those unexpected times and not like
right unbidden.
After. Yeah. Unbidden. And it's just, can I come and cuddle with you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to get stuff done, but you need to, and then they just curl up and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Why can't you be like this all the time? But because then you wouldn't appreciate
it. No, you wouldn't. Much,
you know, and that's where that balance comes in. It's, you know, there's times when you're like, can I make another one of you to replace the one that I'm about to kill? Maybe. But then, you know, but then you have those other times when you're like, oh, I would never trade you for
anything. I had no idea that another human being could have such an effect on my emotions. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think that's the big thing that everybody talks about and tries to put into words. And it's all of the cliches that you hear, but.
Yeah. And it's totally different than, you know, like the relationship that I have with my wife. Mm-hmm. I love her to infinity and beyond, mm-hmm. But it's just different.
Oh yeah,
that parental love and relationship love is just. I don't know how to explain it, mm-hmm. but it is just different.
Yeah,
and I'm sure she would say the same.
Yeah, it's I can't even. I don't know. It's hard to even put into words. You would do anything for them, but there are days where. The sound of the screaming is like glass in your brain. You know? It's confusing to me every day how I can love them so much but be so emotionally triggered by them.
And I tell them, I would do anything for you, but I'm not going to do your homework.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's they don't. So hard. That's again, that concept of understanding of. I would do anything for you does not necessarily mean I'm going to do everything for you.
It's hard. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard not to do everything for them. It's hard to force them to do things that they're capable of doing on their own.
Because they know if they take long enough to do it, you'll just get frustrated and be like, okay, here. So that you can move on to the next thing that you've got to move on to. Mm-hmm.
I find myself wanting to be very... I don't know, poetic to make it seem like I'm not trying to destroy your dreams.
No, wait a minute. When you told me about this, the whole concept was we've got to destroy his dreams of having
children. But his dreams are so like, I don't know. I feel like I want to preserve them almost so that I can draw on them in those bad moments.
That's that maternal instinct.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. I do. I feel the need to nurture that. Yeah.
Well, they're not dead yet.
Good.
Well, we've got time. No, I'm just...
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it was unfocused, but I don't know. Is there anything that you guys have that you want to say about parenting or what you expect of parenting?
Just that I marvel at how people do it. I marvel listening to you two talk. I marvel how you do it. It's not a foreign concept to me, but it's something that I think I appreciate in other people. And
I feel like everybody is right, though, when they say you would be a good... I feel like... don't you, Brian? Or do you think that it would break him? Do you think that it would turn him into, like, a whole different version of himself?
You know, it depends, because every kid's personality is different.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain kids, like, I think, you know, just looking at my kids, I think there's two of them that he would be okay with.
Yeah.
I think McKenna would break him.
Really?
Just, you know, and it's not... Again, let me clarify this.
Right.
Just because she's so uniquely different than the other two.
Yeah.
And not in a bad way.
Right.
But it's just different. And, you know, we're used to that.
Yeah.
You know, like I had in a piece the other day that... She often will just wander herself into mm-hmm. McKenna land and then come back. And when she's gone, there's no breaking through. She is in her own little world and nothing else is around.
Learning how to step back at that point has been hard for me.
You know,
because I'll get involved in the fight or the argument or trying to break through and it doesn't work out.
Well, I mean, it's funny though, because like she'll do it when she's playing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's just like the other day she was outside and she was the only one outside and I'm standing in the kitchen and all of a sudden I hear her talking and I thought maybe, you know, one of the neighbors came over or something. And I look out and I'm like, no, it's just her. And I realized that she's going through this whole, it was almost kind of like she was on her own television show. And she's like narrating herself and she, all her imaginary friends, and she's telling what they're doing and how they should do it. And and it was just okay. But that's, you know, seeing a child's imagination really at work.
Oh, yeah. There are times when I hear them and they're playing and they do the same thing. Mm-hmm. They're at that point where they're doing a lot of pretend play and the stuff that they come up with. Oh, yeah. Like, writing it down.
And I'm always just like, where do you come? And I'm like, I know. I've never said anything like that. And I know Autumn doesn't say anything like that. And it's like, where do you come up with some of this stuff?
Yeah.
But
it's hard for me to imagine having been a kid. I can't remember really. I don't feel like I was that flexible in my thinking and stuff when I was a kid. I don't know. Mine are really, I don't know, imaginative. They impress me. Yeah.
And I think that's the hard part, is trying to nurture, you know, not quell that while still keeping them like, okay, there is a real world that you have to live in sometimes too.
Well, especially raising girls. Like, I want them to be assertive. I want them to be a little bit demanding and, you know, but at the same, not with me. Right. Like, you know, how do I nurture that for the real world? But just listen to me, please. It's, you know.
Yeah. And that's been one of the really eye-opening things, you know, for me. Like, you know, like I said, that the two stints that I had covering sports at the paper, you know, the first one, it was like, okay, you're going to go, you know, to girls basketball or, you know, softball or whatever. And it was like, okay. And, you know, and I was like, oh, come on, I want to go, you know, I want to go to the football game or the wrestling match or something. But then by the time I came back, it was totally different.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a much greater appreciation, you know, for how much harder it is for those girls to get out there and do those things.
Yeah.
And I want my girls to have that strength of character to be able to go out and do that.
Well, it's just so hard to develop it, though.
Yeah.
Raising a strong woman means a lot of fighting. There's so much fighting, and I was an only child, so I don't know. I'm always concerned. I'm like, is this normal? I never had a sibling, so I don't know. Are they going to need therapy for this interaction later on, or is this normal? That's where I struggle. Yeah. But
no, and that's I was the same. I was an only child, and you know, now I have three, and I'm like, are you supposed to fight this much?
I know. I get worried. I'm afraid. I'm like, this probably isn't good, but I don't know. Maybe it's just a normal to remember having a fist fight with your sister over a barbecue ball, you know? I don't know.
Well, and then they, you know, they wrestle around sometimes, and I'm like, are girls supposed to do this? You know, like, I know
everybody
says, you know, says the boys are, oh, yeah, you just let them roughhouse. And I'm like, but my girls roughhouse, like, they're...
These two are, like, wild animals.
Yeah.
Like, feral wild animals. They're... They go out and they come back muddy and filthy, and they've got a pocket full of tadpoles, and it's just ridiculous. But I like that, though.
Mm-hmm.
I have fun with that. So, I don't know. That works for me.
Yeah. Well, and it helps that you live in a place where they can do that,
too. Intentionally, I just put them in the middle of, I don't know, the woods. Just so that they could go outside and play pretty much all summer long. That's all I say.
Yeah.
Go outside and play. I can't think of any questions. I feel like it's kind of like unfocused, but as I go through it, I think it'll, you know, come together. I don't want to, if you guys have anything else that you want to add to it, anything about YDL or any.
We should probably plug the website.
Yeah, plug
I mean, we talked a lot about it, but I don't think any of us ever mentioned that, we are the co-owners, primary reporters for yourdailylocal.com. Mm-hmm. We're also co-owners, primary reporters for d910sports.com. Mm-hmm. Both sites still in their infancy, I guess, they might be toddlers at this point.
Yeah, I think they're growing up a little bit.
and definitely growing.
Yeah.
And we cannot thank people enough, the support, the readership. You know, like I said to Andy, we obviously at Christmas time, you know, nobody's reading stuff on Christmas time. But within a day, everybody and then some was right back reading stuff. And, you know, that to us, that says we got to be doing something right.
Yeah.
You know, that people are coming back. We cannot thank them enough. There's probably more individuals than I would care to try to name.
For sure.
Right.
You know, for their support. Obviously, our families have been huge.
Mm-hmm. How was it switching to this? Did you have to have a lot of buy-in from your families or from your support network? Just emotionally?
Well, you know, I mean, it probably helped that, I mean, at least for me, it helped that, you know, we had been laid off.
Yeah.
You know.
But they weren't like, okay, well, Tractor Supply is hiring. They weren't like, get out there and find something now.
But that was the thing is, you know, at that point in time, nobody was hiring.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like, I'm not doing anything else. Do?
Yeah.
You know,
it is the perfect time.
And, you know, and it was just the start of summertime and the kids were home and I'm like, you know, look, this is something that when we do get some kind of whatever's going to be normal.
Yeah.
You know, when you're back in the office all the time, I can still be home.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if I go to get something now and then all of a sudden now we're both back in the office and now it's, we need, you know, a full-time babysitter and somebody who can be flexible and, you know, hoping that they're going back to school and, you know, and so I think that, again, just the circumstances of where we are really helped that transition a lot.
Right.
And I think now that we've, you know.
You guys have proven, I mean, it's definitely got a good readership. Mm-hmm. When I log on and look at all the different articles, there's a lot of people coming back for the same stories over and over again. And
yeah. You know, and I think, you know, being we're, what, almost 6 months in now, you know, I think she can see, okay, this is something
that could,
you know, there's, you know, we're going to have to go cover meetings or, you know, like come out and do an interview or whatever, but it definitely a lot more flexibility than going and sitting in an office somewhere.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Cool. All right. If you're thinking anything else that you want me to put in here.
I loved this episode because it took me back to a time in my life as a mother when I was uniquely happy. I enjoyed my days in the newsroom, when these two voices, among others, would chirp up with some random question or observation, and soon we'd all just be shooting the shit, but in profoundly productive ways, creatively, or cackling at our own wit and wisdom like a bunch of hyenas. I have a lot of respect for both these guys, as journalists, but also just as guys. Andy and Brian rock, and so does Your Daily Local. You need to run over there now and read columns written by the three of us, as well as local coverage of the things that make Warren, Warren. Find links in the show notes or visit yourdailylocal.com. I'm Stacey Gross, and this has been Two Moms Day Drinking. The music for this podcast was written and produced by my father, Bob Gross, on his goddamn electric ukulele.